So the sugya of Lufnei Iver L'Osita Mechshol is a particularly fascinating sugya in terms of the lumdus and in terms of its wide application. It comes up all over Shas. The major sugyas, if you got a chance to see, I don't know how far we've gotten in Marmachomos, by the way, as that we got a little bit in. So the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zarah and the Gemara actually in Pesachim as well tells us some of the basic parameters, which we'll discuss in a moment. But it's a topic that comes up all over Shas, and as well as the first parak, which we were involved with last semester, the Gemara invokes it on Daf Hei Amud Beis, right next to our Losachmo Sugya that we spent some time on. It comes up as well. We'll discuss behind the scenes in a major way on Daf Yud, and it comes up throughout the Masechta and throughout Shas. So it's worth taking some time to try to understand a little bit the inner structure of this very fascinating concept. Now, we know the Torah tells us in Parshas Kedoshim that one should not put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Lifnei Iver lo siten mechshol. So that pasuk, if you read it literally, it would prompt the kind of response. Sometimes the Gemara has the question, Atu b'shoftani askinan, are we addressing stupid people? Or Atu b'rishi askinan, are we talking about evil people? Was the Torah directed at evil people? I mean, most decent people who are on enough of a refined level to appreciate the Torah, to be holding by the Aseret HaDibros. So hopefully we've already graduated past that stage where anyone thinks that it would be a good thing to put a rock in front of a blind person. The fact that the Torah needs to address us and tell us, oh, by the way, in case you thought, if you see a blind person walking, that putting a rock in front of him is a good idea, so we'll come to tell you, you shouldn't. It's a little bit offensive to think that the Torah should have to address us that way. So Chazal actually tell us that that's not the entire impact of the pasuk, and that the pasuk is interpreted in as many as three different ways. And the way that gets the most attention in the halachic literature and in the Gemaras that we're going to take a look at is a different meaning. It refers to spiritually blind people, like somebody who is misguided in terms of his spiritual stature and therefore earns the title Iver on some level, somebody who has a tendency to sin. So for you to push him further along that path to enable one to sin, that's considered to be a violation of Lufnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. And it's in that context that our Gemara brought it up. The Gemara on Daf Hei and Bav Metzia is talking about whether or not a shepherd can be relied upon, whether or not he is trustworthy to take a shvua. And the Gemara says we have a concern that sometimes when shepherds have their flock grazing, they engage in gzela, they engage in geneva rather, that they allow their animals to eat from other people's fields. So maybe we should say we have such a concern regarding the shepherds. So the Gemara says, no, that's only somebody who's allowing his own animals to graze. But if it's not your own animal, if you're a hired shepherd working for somebody else, so then we're not so afraid that you're going to steal somebody else's produce. And the Gemara goes on to say that we have to assume that way. Otherwise, we would not be allowed to hire shepherds in the first place. How could we give our animals to shepherds to watch if we really suspected that they'd be likely to steal food while they're watching the animals? We would be in violation of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. We would be enabling an Avera through doing that, or causing an Avera through doing that. So the Gemara says, apparently that's not a concern when you're dealing with somebody else's animal. They're not going to have such a temptation to steal on behalf of somebody else's animals. So that's why there's no violation with Ne'ivir Lo Sitein Mechshol. So that's an idea the Gemara says more explicitly in Avodah Zarah and in Pesachim and a few other places, that we have such a notion that if you enable an Avera, that's considered to be Lifnei Iver Lo Sitein Mechshol. Then the Torah's Kohanim tells us there is another interpretation. It's the Medrash. The Medrash over there in Kedoshim tells us that you could also understand it a different way. That it could also refer to giving someone bad advice. That maybe when we say somebody is blind, we don't necessarily mean they're physically blind or spiritually blind, like we just said. But they're missing information. Just like a blind person can't see what's in front of him, so too a person who is not physically blind but is missing some important information, so then they are at a disadvantage. And if you give them bad advice, you tell them, buy this house, it'll be good for you. And you know that it's really not good for them. If you think it is and you're wrong, so that's honest advice. But if you happen to know that it's not good for them and you tell them to buy it anyway, you have some reason why it'll help you or some reason why you want to do that. So that, says the Medrash, that's also a violation of Lufna Yivra L'Sitim Mesh. So we find that this pasuk applies on three different planes, in three different contexts. Apparently, if I put a rock in front of a physically blind person, that seems to violate the simple interpretation of the pasuk. If I enable someone to sin, that is the main application that we find in most of the discussions. And if I give someone bad advice, that could be a third application. It's fascinating, the Chassidim actually has a discussion that maybe we should say that the simple interpretation, which we said was offensive, it's hard to believe we need to be told not to put a rock in front of a blind person. So Menachem Chinuch considers an opinion that maybe that's actually not even the correct interpretation. That one who does that is in violation of general jerkiness, in violation of a bunch of other things, but the Pasuk's not even talking about that. And he gets into a whole discussion of Ein Mikra Yotze Midei Pshuto, that normally we have a tradition that even though psukim can mean many different things on different levels, but we assume they always have to at least mean what they say. They can mean more things, but they have to at least mean the simple interpretation. So the Chesrinach has a whole discussion why it may not be the literal translation. The Torah Tamimah talks about that also. But Pashupshat, it is included. Pashupshat is that if you put a rock in front of a physically blind person, so one is in violation of Lufna Yiver, and we have these two other interpretations as well, giving us three interpretations. If you saw, I also put the reference to the Yad Raman, Baba Basra, where he invokes this more in a literal context as well. There is a whole discussion, I spoke about this a little bit yesterday in the Hashavas Avedish, we had the Beis Medrash, that there is a discussion, what is the mucker in the Torah for the Isser of Nezikin? That we know the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim tells us that if we damage somebody's property, so then we have to pay for the damage. But it doesn't say clearly over there that it's usur to cause the damage. So how do I know that it's usur? I assume that it is, or I assume that breaking somebody's stuff is prohibited, even if I plan on paying for it. So how do you know? So there's a whole discussion. There's a Stipler in the beginning of Bava Kamma and many others who talk about this at length, trying to find out what the source is. And one of the possible sources, the Yad Ramah says that there's this application of Lufna Yivra L'Sitein Michshol, that if you create dangerous circumstances, so then whether it harms people or it harms animals or it harms objects, whatever it is, so you are creating a dangerous environment with your stuff, that's a violation of Lufna Yivra L'Sitein Michshol. So that's more in line with a literal meaning. And we have a physical rock and a person who is likely to trip over it. And we have these extra interpretations as well. So most of our focus is going to be on this second interpretation. This idea that if you enable somebody to do an Aveira, you're in violation of Neiva L'Sitei Mershon. Before we talk about the Lamedus, which is really fascinating, so just to get some of the parameters down. So the Gemara does say that there is a major qualification within this halacha, that normally, so I help somebody to sin, I'm in violation of Lufnei Iver, assuming that it's what is known in the Gemara as Trei Avra Denaira. Now what does that mean? It means literally two banks of the river. And the connotation is that the guy who wants to sin is on one bank of the river, and the other person who can help him, or the item that he needs, let's say, the non-kosher food that he wants, or the wine that the Nazir wants. It's very fascinating, by the way, we'll come back to this, that the Gemara goes out of its way, apparently, to give unusual examples. Now, you could say, give a very simple example, that you have a person who wants tray food, something like that, and he's on one side of the river, and the tray food is on the other side of the river. So he needs your help in order to be connected to the tray food. But it's interesting, the Gemara specifically gives a little bit off the beaten track examples. What are the examples the Gemara gives? Not simply a per case with a person eating tray food, but what example?
Another and wine,
that's one of them. And what else? Right, so two examples are both probably instructive, and we'll come back to this. That one, it seems to make it clear that it's not limited to Ivers who are Jews, but that it applies also when dealing with non-Jews, because the Gemara specifically talks about a Ben Noach who wants to eat an Eivir Menachai. It really seems like it's trying to make a point to go out of its way to give an unusual kind of an example like that. And a Nazir who wants to drink wine, which is also, again, you could come up with so much easier examples than this. It sounds like the Gemara is making a point by using specifically these two categories in addition to everything else, but going out of its way to tell you that it applies to a Nazir and it applies to a Ben Noach, both of those you could have had room to question. So we'll talk about what they could possibly teach us in terms of the parameters here. But in any event, the point is, the Gemara says that it really applies Minat Torah if you have a separation. If one person, the person who wants to sin, is on one side of the river, and the object that he needs to do his sin is separated from him by the river in the middle. And he needs you to bridge the gap. In other words, it only applies, strictly speaking, if you are a crucial part of the process. If he could do the Aveira without you, so then that's not called the Fneiver. You're not in violation under those circumstances. Now the Rishonim point out, some of the Rishonim will put on their sheet, and we'll discuss the context in which it comes up, that there is an Isser Drabanan that's relevant. Just so you should be aware of some of the details, that if you are not crucial to the process, but you're enabling an Aveira anyway, so then that's an Issa Rabbanan that has its own name. That's called Misayeya. Misayeya Lidei Ovri Aveira, somebody who is helping out those who are sinning. That's an Issa Rabbanan, and we won't spend that much time on it. You should just be aware that there's an interesting question one could ask about that, which is the topic of a lot of discussion in the halakhic literature. That how should you categorize that Issa Rabbanan? Well, we could, on the one hand, say that it's an extension of Lifnei Iver, that it's Lifnei Iver Drabbanan, that Minhat Torah is only Lifnei Iver if you're crucial. And Midrabbanan, it extends even if you're not crucial. Or you could say that really it's not a halacha in Lifnei Iver. It's a halacha in a different pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. Anyone want to take a guess what I'm talking about? It's another pasuk which could equally be relevant. That we have a mitzvah in the Torah of Tochacha. And if somebody is doing an Avera, so strictly speaking, according to the Chumash, you're supposed to rebuke him. You're supposed to try to give him musar and convince him to stop. Now, it's a big question to what extent that applies nowadays. The Gemara Masechet Erechin has the impression that nowadays, meaning even in the time of the Gemara, nobody was on a level to be able to successfully transmit that message. So, without getting into the details of how much Hilchos Tochacha is put into effect today, it still seems indicated that even if you're not going to say anything, even if you're not going to give the guy Musar, but to help, you're going to actually help in the Avera, that would certainly seem to go against the purpose of Tochacha. Maybe it's not productive for you to say anything, but for you to be involved in helping, it's hard to see how that's appropriate in light of the Din of Tochacha. So this idea of Misayeya, there are those who understand it as a detail in Hilchos Lifnei Iver, and there are those who see it as emanating from Tochacha, that essentially it's a contradiction to Tochacha And it's not just failing to do it, but it's an active contradiction to tochacha for you to partake in an avera, even if you are not crucial to the process. Hi.
Is there a scenario where you can do both? Like, I mean, I've been in an awkward position as an NCSY advisor, where there'd be like a kid eating like Doritos or something, and like, if I tell him and he knows he's not going to listen to me, he'll still eat the Doritos, and then, you know, it's a whole, that's almost like living so, but if I don't tell him, would I be in that category of Messiah Lavera?
So no, not telling him is, if you're not helping, if you're not passing the Doritos to him. So I'm assuming any of the ice cream Doritos are not kosher food.
Israel.
Okay, so if you're not, I have no prejudgment about them, I don't know exactly what they are, but if he asks you to, that's basically three levels, right? That if he cannot obtain Doritos, except that you could provide them to him, so then that would be with the Ibrahim and the Torah. If he could get them, but you pass them to him anyway, so he pass me the Doritos, and you realize he could easily have anyone else pass it or get it himself, but just you're helping in a non-crucial way, so that would seem to be misayaya, which would be an active negation of tochacha. But if you're not passing them to him, you're not helping him out, you're just not saying anything, so that is, on the surface, a bitul tochacha. And there is a whole literature about tochacha. What does it mean to fail to do tochacha? What consequences does that have for you? But you have to first determine that tochacha is going to be productive. So the Gemara already says, back in the time of the Gemara, that nowadays, meaning then a days, we don't know anybody who's capable of doing tochacha effectively. The concern that you raised is also a valid concern, because the Gemara, sometimes the Gemara also does say that within certain parameters, we won't get into our sugya right now, so we'll get into details about it, but within certain parameters, if you know the person's not going to listen, so better he should do the Avera b'shogeg ben b'mezid, so maybe better not to know. So there are very valid reasons not to say anything, so assuming that you're not obligated to say anything, so then it's not your problem. It's not your responsibility. If there was a context where there was a chiyuv tochacha, which again is a very tricky point nowadays, but it was a chiyuv to say something, so then there is an extensive literature as to what does that say about you if you don't do it. But it's a valid position to take that not all contexts necessarily call for you to actively say anything. But if you're helping, so that's where you have the sisa drabanan of tochacha, and that's what sisa drabanan of sayaya, which may correlate to tochacha. And again, the point would be, okay, maybe it's not productive for you to say anything, but to actually help, that would seem to be actively negating what the Torah tells you that you should do something about it. So that's just an important background to know about how the Iver works, that it functions basically when you are crucial to the process. That's when the Issa Deraisa applies. If you're not crucial to the process, so then there's this Issa Derabanan of Misayeh. I should also point out, this may be relevant to your question, that there is some subjectivity in assessing that, because what do we mean impossible? Impossible means that if you're not going to help him, he's absolutely not going to have any possibility of doing it, or he'll have to look for a long time and then he'll find somebody else who will help him. So how do we define crucial? So on the other hand of the spectrum, if we say you're not crucial, so what do we mean you're not crucial? So why is he asking you at all? If he says, pass me the item, and he could get up across the room and get it himself, so, well, should we say you're getting it to him quicker? So then,
what if he's eating them already, for instance?
So that's also a relevant consideration. But when we say that you're a crucial part of the process, or you're not a crucial part of the process, there's some subjectivity. Because presumably, even when we call you crucial, in most cases there'll be some possible way you could do it without you, maybe it'll take a lot of effort. And when we say that you're not necessary to the process, you must be making it a little quicker or a little bit more convenient, otherwise he wouldn't be bothering you in the first place. So there's some subjectivity in terms of assessing what end of the spectrum it's going to land on, and that's a point halacha l'maaseh sometimes to assess. But strictly speaking, you have these two categories, that if you're crucial, it's lifnei iver min haTorah. If you're not, you have an issa d'rabbanan of misayeh, and of course, in terms of practical halacha, when something is also midrabanan, so we'll have a lot more latitude if it's necessary and a lot more flexibility. So within that parameter, within those parameters, within that framework, so there are a number of lamdisha questions. There are at least two major chakiras the Achronim have about how this iser of helping somebody to sin, how it works. And what I would like to suggest is that the two major chakiras, which at this point we'll probably discuss tomorrow, the two major chakiras in Lifnei Iver are very much intertwined with each other. They're very much connected and dependent on each other. And that both of those questions are really dependent on an earlier question. So we'll start with what I think is the earliest foundational question that's going to impact everything about how you understand the sister of Lifnei Iver. Hi.
The question of convenience, the two questions were the one.
We haven't said them yet. There will be two lobster questions we'll have to get to tomorrow, but as an introduction to those questions, I think both questions that we'll see, we haven't mentioned them yet, both questions are going to be dependent on each other. They're not separate questions. And that both of them are rooted in an earlier question. So the earlier question is as follows. If we just said that there are three interpretations of Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mikshe, again, a physical rock helping someone to sin and bad advice, are those really three different interpretations? Is this a case of Chazal telling us the Pasuk means one thing, and here's another Masorah, and here's another Masorah, Torah Shabbat Peh, telling us different meanings to the Pasuk? Or could you explain it differently? How could you explain it differently? I want to take a stab on it. How could you say a different approach and not say that we have three different interpretations here?
Yeah? They're all stemming from the same deceiving, or I guess the same root of pushing.
Right. Basically, you could say that essentially what you're saying is that maybe this is all one iser. There's just one concept, and it has different arenas. But maybe Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Mikshel just means one thing. It means when someone is at a disadvantage, it is a prohibition to exploit that disadvantage to hurt them. And therefore, everything stems from that. If they are physically disadvantaged because they can't see, you're not allowed to make them fall. If they are spiritually disadvantaged because they have a tendency to sin, you're not allowed to push them in that direction and make them sin. And if they are informationally disadvantaged or intellectually disadvantaged, whatever it is, if they don't have all the information they need to function effectively, to exploit that disadvantage by pushing them to a bad decision, that's another application. So one could say that this is not Torah Shabbat Peh telling us additional Isurim. But there's one Isur here that just has different spheres of application. It's all the same thing. So I think that's a very crucial question. And we'll get into the details tomorrow, but I'll tell you why I think it's so crucial, and then you'll think about this tomorrow during Seder. How far did anyone get with the Maamar Kamus? Anyone get...
Yeah, our
ones
long.
Sorry, they are very long, right? Anyone get halfway through them? Right. Anyone get a third of the way, quarter of the way?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
so, sorry.
Got the
okay. So fine. So that's. So I'll give you this framework question. Sorry. Okay. So I'll give you this framework question to think about tomorrow. And tomorrow during Seder, try to see how this applies to things. When it comes to one of the two questions that I mentioned, or the beginning of one of the two questions that they ask about Lifnei Iver, is as follows. This is not even the whole question. This is basically the opening part of the question. There are two very different ways to understand what this Isser of Lifnei Iver would mean. On the one hand, you could say that what this concept is telling us is that there's a concept of accessory in halacha. The same way in American law you have such a concept that if I drive the getaway car for a bank robbery, so I could be prosecuted and I could go to jail for bank robbery, even though I didn't enter the bank, even though I didn't stick any gun in the face of any tellers. I didn't walk out with any bags with dollar signs on it. I didn't do any of that stuff. But I made it possible by driving the car. So in secular law, you have such a concept that an accessory is considered to be a crime in and of itself. Or is considered to be a participant in the crime. So maybe that's what we're being told here. That when the Torah prohibits any action, it doesn't only prohibit the one who's actually pulling the trigger, who's actually performing the action, but anyone who makes it possible is also included in that action, is also an accessory, is also prosecutable, so to speak, for that aveira. Or we could say that no, if I help somebody else do an aveira, so he did the aveira. I didn't do the aveira. If I give somebody else non-kosher food, I've never tasted non-kosher food in my life, so I still haven't. I did something else. What did I do? I did something to hurt this person. This person is going to be subject to an onesh and shamayim, let's say, or is spiritually suffering now because of this sin. And by helping them sin, I essentially hurt them. I essentially caused them a problem. So those are two very different ways of understanding what's going on here. Right? Essentially, is it that I am partaking in the avera myself? It's as if I ate the non-kosher food, even though my tongue has never tasted non-kosher food. But because I enabled the other person to do it, I'm the guy who drove the getaway car, so to speak. And therefore, I'm also liable for that avera. Or should we say, no, he's the one who ate non-kosher food. And he's the one who offended God by eating non-kosher food. What did I do? I hurt him. I got him in trouble upstairs. Right, like in a schoolroom context or a sibling context, we can easily imagine this. Right? So you push your sibling to do something wrong. He gets in trouble, so who did you offend? You offended him. Right? You offended the sibling. Now the sibling's in trouble because of you. So that's something you did wrong to that person. So those are two very different conceptions of what the Ivar lo sitei nechshol. And they have major nafkaminas, as we'll see tomorrow. It affects the halacha in huge ways. But what I think it's worth taking note of is that it very much comes out of how you understand the pasuk. Because if you want to say that we're talking about an accessory concept here, I'm sorry to run a minute over time, we'll finish in a second, that if you want to say we're talking about an accessory concept, that it's ki'ilu, you did the aveira, that forces us to say that the lifnei iver of enabling an aveira is a completely different interpretation of the pasuk. Because that's totally a different version of what the pasuk is talking about. If I were to say to you, what's so terrible about putting a rock in front of a blind person? You wouldn't have a chakir about it. It's very easy. I know what's so terrible. It's because he falls down and hurts himself. Right? Nobody would say, yeah, it's bad because if I trip a blind person, it's as if I myself fall and I'll get hurt. Right? We know that that's not the pshat. So if you want to say that that's the pshat in the Aveira application, then you're saying it's a completely different interpretation. The pasuk exists on a couple of different levels. And if you want to say that it's all one pasuk with different, it's all one theme with different applications, then you're not going to say the accessory interpretation. Then you're going to say the pasuk means I shouldn't hurt people by taking advantage of their disadvantage. I shouldn't trip them to fall. I shouldn't give them bad advice. And I shouldn't make them sin. I shouldn't hurt them in any of those ways. So I think this is a very fundamental point. Think about this tomorrow as you see some of the sources during Seder, the longer Seder we have tomorrow, that whether or not you're open to all these additional interpretations in Lifnei Iver lo sitei nechshol is going to be very much affected by how you understand the multi-level interpretation here. Is it all one idea with different scopes? Or is it a pasuk that is applied in completely different ways? And that's going to have major ramifications we'll see tomorrow. All right, everyone should have a wonderful first day of the semester.